Hello, my friends. Welcome to Second John. My name is Chris Langham, and this is the second shortest book in the whole Bible. What's the shortest? I'll give you a hint. It's coming very soon. That's right, Third John. So the Apostle John grabbed the top two spots in the competition for shortest Bible book. Take that, Philemon. Not this time, Obadiah. Now remember, short can be amazing. Pixar shorts, short round, short circuit, all awesome. These two shorts are personal letters from the Apostle John, two of his five Bible books, which I like to call the Johnny Five. So what do we have in these two letters? Second John is addressed to the lady chosen by God and to her children, whom I love in the truth. Most scholars believe that chosen lady refers to a church. The location is unspecified, but John clearly has a personal connection and relationship there. Third John is addressed to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Gaius is a faithful Christian and John's good friend. There's a phrase repeated in both greetings that also foretells John's focus. John tells both recipients that he loves them in the truth, and the connection between love and truth will play a key role in both letters. Also in both letters, we find a focus on the importance of showing hospitality to traveling missionaries. One notable difference, in 3 John, he encourages hospitality to those who are serving God faithfully. But in 2 John, he gives a strong warning against hospitality to traveling deceivers. And it's in the warnings that you get a clear sense that something is up. John is responding to something, a situation. There's a church in danger. What's the danger? We'll get to that. These two little letters are part of a much bigger story, a story that includes traveling deceivers, true disciples, dangerous hospitality, and the serious perils of arrogance in authority. That last one might hit home for some of us. Ever deal with a church leader who loves to be first? They can do a lot of damage. We'll see that in 3 John. Now, all of those things are referenced in the letters. The challenge is this. We don't have the whole story. John writes to people who are in the story, so they already know it. And while our church ancestors saved these two letters, they did not record the story behind them. We can infer and interpolate, but we don't know, which leaves me with a dilemma. Do we just read John's letters and learn from the general truths he gives us? Or do we attempt to piece together the story so we can really see how it all applies in real life? After all, this was real life. These are real letters dealing with real problems in a real church. You know, reading through these for me is kind of like reading some old letters from my great-great-grandfather to his family. At first, they're just sentimental, with a little bit of practical, but then you notice something, a few little clues that something was up. There's a backstory. And I know the letters are old and they're not written directly to me, but if it's my great-grandparents, the relationships in those letters led to me. Well, John really is one of our great-great-grandparents in the faith, and we are the legacy of that love among the first Christians. This is our heritage. So here's what I decided. We are going to piece together some of that story, partly because it's way too interesting to just let it go, but also because the lessons in these letters are so much more powerful when we see them applied practically. And that's our purpose for being here, after all, to learn from John's letters and apply them. But we have to be careful. What we're doing is a little bit like in Jurassic Park when they used frog DNA to fill in the gene sequence gaps on the dinosaurs. It's going to be super helpful for us to see a fuller picture here, but carefully. If we don't draw clear lines of distinction, we might start drawing conclusions and learning lessons that aren't in the Bible. Don't do that. Actually, this is a great opportunity for you to learn some key lessons on proper hermeneutics, which is a fancy word for Bible study methodology. The technique we're applying here is known as mirror reading. Reading between the lines to find the backstory is good. But if 2 John starts to hop, say ribbit, and eat honey smacks, that's the frog DNA. We added that. Never make conclusions from assumptions. Our takeaways here should come directly from the Bible text. That's it. But applying those lessons to our world will be much easier when we imagine how they played out in John's. And you'll know it's a good conclusion if the application stands just as valid with or without the assumption we added in. Then you're safe. When the conclusion comes from the assumption, you're in trouble. Worse yet, I've read theology books where the conclusion is the assumption, just reworded. That's a classic mode of deception called circular reasoning. Good lesson for us here, because deception will be a key part of the backstory here in 2nd and 3rd John. All clear? Okay, hold on to your butts. Here we go. And I think that's all I've got for Jurassic Park quotes, but we'll see. Let's start with a little background. In these letters, we step into the world of the early church. The first Christians have spread the gospel far and wide, and home churches have sprung up and taken root in many cities and villages. The first apostles carried the news of Jesus east to the Middle East and India, south into Africa, and north and west into Asia Minor and Europe. With so much growth, communication was vital, and messengers carried letters, news, and personal greetings from church to church. Those messengers were like lifeblood in the veins of the church, traveling back and forth and connecting the body of Christ in all directions. Church history records that the Apostle John stationed himself in Ephesus late in life, which Paul had established as a hub for training and sending missionaries. Surely many letters like these ran to and fro in that early church as issues arose and apostolic wisdom was required. Several letters survived, and as time passed, church leaders copied and held on to these letters to help them keep sound doctrine, and as John puts it in 2 John verse 8, to continue in the teaching of Christ. The New Testament books and letters faithfully record the teachings of Jesus through the apostles and apply them to church life so that we can know them and live them out, or as John puts it, walk in the truth. In 2 John, that includes loving one another and showing discerning hospitality. Verse 4 of both letters is nearly identical, and it captures John's heart clearly. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. John wants us to live it, to walk in it. At this point, he's likely close to 100 years old, and he affectionately refers to all the younger Christians that he has discipled as his children. Gaius is one of them. John calls him a dear friend. John's personality shines through here. He loves people, cares for them deeply. But he's also deeply concerned about reports he's received back from some of those traveling messengers and missionaries. In 3 John, he thanks Gaius for hosting some of them, explaining that through hospitality, we work together for the truth. But in 2 John, he warns the church sternly that they not show hospitality to deceivers. Anyone who welcomes them shares in their wicked work. Apparently, those same veins that carried lifeblood also carried infection. Bad theology has been around for a long time, and discernment was key. And it's in these warnings that we begin to piece together the story. Now, the two letters are not necessarily written to the same location or situation, but they do match up quite neatly. And we're going to bring them together into one story to help us color in the lines. Remember, frog DNA. Helpful, but not conclusive. If we put the letters together, it appears that John has received news from messengers who visited a distant church where some believers continue in the truth, but others have been taken in by deceivers. In 3 John, one of those deceivers has taken control of the church, Diotrephes. John knows this guy. He describes Diotrephes as a man who loves to be first and is spreading malicious nonsense about John and his messengers. Diotrephes keeps the church under his thumb by refusing to welcome other believers and forbidding church members to welcome them. John has a delicate situation to respond to. Truth is under fire. Arrogance has a pulpit. And precious believers are getting swept up in the whole mess of it all. If any of that sounds familiar to you, don't be surprised. Church today is not so different. Arrogance still does all kinds of damage when it gets authority. And truth still gets lost in the crossfire when church leaders vie for control in very unchristian ways. So how does John respond? Well, he begins by writing two short letters, one to the whole church to encourage them to walk in truth and recognize deceivers. That's 2 John. And another to his faithful friend Gaius, whom he trusts, to address issues more directly and thank him for hosting faithful messengers. That's 3 John. He also tells both of them that he will show up in person to address all matters more completely. So what does John say in those letters? Read both 2 and 3 John today, and I'll meet you back here next time.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.